Welcome to this episode of George Nieces, a new media room, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I am one of your hosts, Kyle, joined by one of my other co-hosts, my only other co-host, I guess. Tim, how are you doing? How many episodes have we done? We still never figure out. Like, introducing someone is so weird to me. It's so, like, anxiety. Because I'm like, I listen to other shows where, like, you'll say, like, and I'm joined by, and then you would say, Tim.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever figured that out.
No.
We've never taken the time to discuss it. So this is a great time to discuss
it. Yeah, workshopping while we're recording is perfect.
Yeah, it's just because I'm putting off breaking some bad news to you, Tim.
What's the bad news?
I did it to you again, bud. We're not going to be able to watch, or we're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez, where George has just finished remodeling Carmen's room into a new entertainment room, watching Clint Eastwood movies with surround sound, and his niece Veronica returns announcing that her trust fund has been frozen and now she has to stay in his newly renovated man cave. We actually have a really good episode of the show. We're going to be talking with an amazing creator, Matthew Ehrman, about a bunch of his stuff. Mainly we're going to be focused on Long Lost, but we're going to touch on Terminal Punks, which just dropped, and some little project, I think, Power Rangers. I don't know if people know what that is, but very excited to have Matthew on. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me. This is, I'm immediately, like, filled with imposter syndrome listening to you guys. This is excellent.
Awesome. I should ask that, too. It's no surprise, because I've talked about it many times. Always afraid of names. Is it Matt? You like Matthew or Matt? Again, love working.
Oh, no, no. This is good. I feel like this is always an important part of the relationship establishing that we as humans do. But no, it's Matt. It's Matthew professionally. It's really whatever you want personally, but Matthew professionally is where I'm going with from.
All right, I'll just switch it up mid. We won't even.
Yeah, no. Do whatever you want. I like we were saying. I'm completely fluid with that stuff.
Yeah. So that kind of I would try to segue. There's no good segue to say anything, but I think I mean both me and Tim, fans of Long Lost. I know originally I had told Tim, I was reaching out to Matthew. Terminal Punks just dropped, and he's like, oh yeah, like he picked up Long Lost, and he like knew right away. So like,
yeah, I think I was at Emerald City a couple years back, just walking around, and I saw your table, and I was like, this looks cool, so I just bought it on a whim.
Thank you. That's honestly, that's really incredible to hear. I very much appreciate it. Yeah, no, thank you. I'm taken aback by that kindness.
Yes. He wasn't one of the people that stood at the table and said, did you draw this?
Oh,
you
didn't. Is this a video game? I've gotten that before. That's a weird one. Someone picks up a comic book and asks you dead in the eyes, is this a video game? I'm like, no. You've had books around. Anyway.
Which issue does Deadpool come in? Because I don't see him in this issue at all. I try and avoid the, like, you know, what is this story type of thing. Because I would hope at this point, like, people either read it, or obviously we're going to be kind of talking about the issues and the ideas in whole. But I think for a book like this, where on the surface it's kind of a horror. I almost want to say like slice of life, like character study of these two sisters, but at the same time it's really dense, and I say that like in the best way possible. Like there's so much, and I love like every bit of it. But it's also like very surreal and dreamlike, and there's tons of like world building. What was kind of like the like seed of the idea, and then like how I'm always interested, like how something like that like develops into, again, I think this is like a really like intense and like. There's a lot of depth to this comic, so I'm always like kind of wondered, like, how does that story build for you into something like this?
So, I mean, the answer that I've given in the past, and the reason I preface that is because I think it's kind of it's the narrative built around whatever this thing is. But and I'm doing air quotes, even though you can't see them. The quote unquote inception of this story was my wife, the artist on the book, Lisa Sterl. We love horror, and we love it as a concept and a genre. And I've always felt drawn to, I mean, I'm a scaredy cat. Like I can't really like commit to doing anything terrifying. Like I'm even some of the scarier video games that we've had that I just can't, like, it's too much for me. I have to have Lisa play them. It's just like, but we love that. And I think the thing that the genesis of what this all started from, the kind of the seed of this, is that there was a dissatisfaction with the media that we've consumed not hitting the right spot a lot of the times. And I think that we knew what we liked so much, and we got that that feeling, that endorphin rush, that like, oh, this is, I found something. Like, this was made for me. We hadn't experienced that a lot, and so we wanted to really just make a cool horror thing that was completely us. And I mean, honestly, the thing is, it's like, as much as I wanted it to be a story, we didn't know that this thing was ever going to exist outside of a couple, you know, pitch pages that we put together. And we had so many rejections from so many places, too, that it's just by sheer luck that we found Scout, and Scout liked it, and it hit at the right time, and that's why it exists. So, I mean, yeah, the initial concept was just was born out of spite and bad emotions for things that we wanted to see and wanted to experience, and it was purely selfish.
Is that we talk a lot of like horror comics on this, because I think it's one of the things me and Tim enjoy the most. Same with like kind of humor books. Is for you, like, what is, because I think the interesting thing about the horror genre itself is that it is something that can be filtered through any either emotion or theme or
tone. It's really, almost a tool, really,
right? And I mean, and again, I enjoy kind of all aspects of it. I mean, like the slashes or anything like this, but I really like this stuff, and I feel like this is, I was watching some like analytical video on like horror, and like there's the like kind of next step I think horror fans often take is like that's the horror that's based in atmosphere. So something like Hereditary or Midsommar or The Witch, where it's not necessarily, maybe not for everyone, but the horror in itself is kind of on that like visceral like level. And I feel like that's what you get out of this. But like by the, I'm not going to spoil the end of it, but by the end, when you kind of get to that building moment, like it is fairly, I think, unsettling, just because of who you're attached to, and then obviously also those kind of like emotions that are going on. Is that is that kind of the horror you guys were either striving for, or is that what you kind of enjoy?
Yeah, I think what it's funny. It's like when you're talking about horror, it's like I don't know if I enjoy any of these aspects. It's just like it fulfills this this almost I mean, I don't want to say the word perverse, because I think that obviously puts some sort of sexual thing on it, but it's almost like this when I see a character that I like, you know, experience some horrific fate, and the narrative kind of works along with that, I think that is in and of itself like an aspect of horror, or like, when you think about like David Lynch films in particular, and I know he gets thrown out a lot because like I'm a bearded white guy, so it's like of course I like him. But like, but like I don't know, an ominous shot of an electrical socket. There's nothing inherently scary about that, but the way that he puts the artistic spin on and almost like his own baggage, whatever that is, on this particular thing, it makes it unsettling and it makes it horror. It makes it. The lack of context really makes it horrifying and weird and unsettling. And I think that to me is the thing that kind of boils and like gets to the heart of what I really enjoy about the quote unquote horror genre, is being able to take, honestly, like my personal baggage and kind of put it out into this story without the context of what that is for me, and still try to impart the feelings that I have or that I've experienced. And kind of like, I don't know. It's a, I'm trying to think of a metaphor, like mutually assisted bad feelings, if that makes sense.
Is that like bad, like, reverse empathy?
Yeah, it's like we're both co-signing. Like, I wrote this book. You're basically co-signing when you buy it that you want to experience whatever I've put in it. So, like, and you know, it's a horror book too. So you're kind of stepping in with knowing that some unsettling shit's gonna happen. And then I get to play with those expectations with that. And I don't know. I think horror is just a really fun genre to write in. And it's also a really big genre too, like you were saying.
Yeah. And well, and I think, like, I mean, if you were to look at like this and then kind of the horror aspects to Terminal Punks is fairly different kind of themes and tones, but again, striking those. Like, I'm always, again, interested in, like, and this is something you discuss in kind of the wrap-up of the second arc is, like, the kind of personal emotions you were going through while writing it. And then, you know, that obviously filters into the book. And the interesting thing about literature in any way is, like, kind of being able to shroud that in subtleness and themes and characters.
Yeah.
And you're able to be, like, kind of cathartically do that. But as a reader, like, you can come at it something completely different, but still read. I mean, the kind of the end of this, where there's the, I mean, I don't think it's any spoiler. Like, there's the parental issue and the kind of reconciliation that, you know, people are people prior and past, and there's something to holding on to, and you know, having kind of a you know, father who is, like, dealt with alcoholism and stuff like that, and he's always like, he's kind of do it. Like, to me, that's a lot of times in horror, that stuff that, like, I grasp to, like, the realization that, you know, people are people, like, stuff like that. So it's so interesting, again, kind of being able to filter that in, but having it work because it's, you know, effectively told through narrative and pacing and all that stuff.
I really, that's really kind. I, long lost, there are a lot of aspects to it that are personal to me. There's a lot, I mean, it's all fiction, obviously. But at the same time, you know, you can't help but draw from the things that you've experienced. And I think the really great thing about horror is that, and I kind of, you know, you get to really play with expectations. And I think that's, I obviously love my wife, but also the fact that she helped create this, like, I think her art and her ability to tap into a style of storytelling that you wouldn't normally associate with the type of story that we told. And I think that helped in subverting the expectations for what a horror book can be. Especially when you're coming from the American market, like...
Well, that's, and I think that's the, like, one of the really interesting things, like, hearing you talk about kind of pitching it and getting rejection is, like I would read Lisa, like, illustrate, like, the phone book, like, any, like, it's fucking, like, it's a beautiful book, and, like, in contrast to kind of what you do with, I think where the story is best is obviously kind of the pacing, the characters who, like, you just fall in love with and relate to, but also, like, again, kind of that juxtaposition of this almost, like, manga-esque style she takes to it, and then able to kind of then revert it to, like, a more, like, at times, like, cartoony, like stylistic. Like, it's really great. And then, like, there's, like, these beautiful shots, like, kind of later when you get into this ethereal world. Like, it's such a great kind of, like you said, kind of playing against type that works so well in the kind of, like, very dark story you guys are telling. Is that, I mean, I'm obviously familiar with her stuff. Is that something coming the book as a pair, like, you guys really wanted to play with the art style?
Oh, yeah. I think, I mean, Lisa has such an incredible sense of, I think, the way that she can tell a story and be all and it be completely her her way of telling the story, but also be influenced and it be like it's fluid, like the way she moves through her influences, and like, and there's so much of Sailor Moon and Long Lost Mm-hmm. And her love for that growing up, and it's I think that's kind of the magic of Lisa, is that she took this dark story and put it through her incredible unique filter, and I don't think the story works without her essentially directing it, because that's what she did. I mean, I didn't know how to write comic scripts when I was writing this. I essentially had gone from short stories straight into writing a comic book, a 12-issue published comic book we didn't even pitch it for single issues. And so it was just like, Lisa did so much work on this book to make it readable, to make it, she's the co-creator. Like her directing is as much of the story and as much as it's as important to this book as, you know, the script that was written, because honestly, more so, because it's without her visual element, you know, working and making the characters so likable, I can't imagine this book any other way.
Yeah, it's one of these, and I think it's, to me, like a clear one of the like cues I think to like books where I like the quality of it is like, this is a book I would picture like a one person kind of team creating, because it feels so fluid. Like, I can't imagine having to describe or come up with these scenes and being able to relay that from one person to another and it becomes so like realized, and to like the books that are like that, where there's obviously two people working so well together and able to kind of get that across, because like easily one aspect could fall apart so easily, and it's kind of losing that. And I think, like, again, I think this book does it.
Thank amazingly. You. Yeah. I attribute it to our willingness to, I think we really trust each other artistically to collaborate with each other. I think that's the thing, is that, I mean, I love the collaboration aspect of comics so much. The idea that like the stuff that I see in my head and write down on a Google Docs, there's another artist. There's other artists that come in to, you know, interpret this, and that's what it is. It's this kind of like, it's this really beautiful, weird one-to-one where I write this thing and it gets kind of put through this artistic filter of a unique artistic filter. And the most exciting thing about writing comics is getting to see what comes out, because, you know, there's obviously like a picture in my head of what I'm kind of seeing or how the story's going or what I'm visualizing and trying to describe as best I can. And I think the thing, you know, Lisa and I have been together for 10 years, 11 years, going on the double digits, if not already. So like, we just, I don't know. It's like, I trust her to interpret and she trusts me to write my true self and to keep her in mind. I think that's the thing, is like, I write for the both of us so that I want to write cool shit that she can draw, because I like seeing the stuff that she draws.
She, for you guys, kind of, it's again interesting, the idea that kind of pitching this as a story and then it developing into 12 issues, which I think again is kind of amazing, because I think again it's so dense. Like, I love, I was like, I could read more and more of this, but I think pacing you guys approached in 12 issues is crazy, because I think it pulls off like every issue there's a driving force. And even if you look at kind of the end of that first arc, I mean, in a sense, there's so many questions in that, which I find exciting. Like, I don't need to be told everything. Like, I like going into it that way. Is that something for you, coming from kind of a prose sense of mind to writing it and then kind of pacing it out? Like, what was your approach to kind of getting that pacing working so well.
Thank you so much for that. That's really kind to hear. I've always felt very self-conscious about the pacing of Long Lost. And I say self-conscious in the fact that I'm very aware of how it's not paced like comic books. If that makes sense. It didn't. I mean, I didn't know what comic book pacing was. I didn't really understand. Like, and this is like kind of my ignorance, really. Unfortunately, you know, and my lack of preparation is like when we were pitching this for graphic novels, we were pitching graphic novels because that's mostly what I read. And you know, Scout was in our comic book store where we get our books, and I thought their stuff looked interesting, so we thought to pitch them as well. And when they came back with the 12 issues thing, I, you know, Lisa and I had a really big discussion about whether it was possible for us. Like, you know, we weren't going to be getting paid for this book for months. And so it was just this, it just had to be this very structured labor of love that we kind of had to believe in. And so, I mean, the 12 issues thing was really stressful. Lisa had never drawn anything like this before as quickly as she needed to do it. I think she was drawing, you know, and the thing too is Scout didn't give us a, Scout kind of told us to do whatever we wanted with the page count. So most of the issues that were printed were like 28, 27 pages. So they're like even longer than normal issues. Because I didn't know that a comic book was only supposed to be 22 issues. I had no idea. I was like, "Oh, you're so I get 28 pages in a comic book to write whatever I want? Okay, then that's what I'll do." And so, like, I gave Lisa probably 3 extra issues of work to do in between the 12 that she had already scheduled for. So, like. Oh my God! The first. Okay, so this is. I don't think I've ever told this story. But I think I have to now that we're talking about this. So this is how dumb I was going into Long Lost. I got the pages, like how many pages the first issue is going to be. And it's like 32, 28 for content. I was like, oh, 28 pages. Cool. Front and back. So I was like, so my first script for Long Lost number one was 56 pages long. And God, you know, Lisa is a saint because she got the script.
I was gonna say, lucky she's your wife.
Well, she got the script and she didn't say anything. And she penciled out, you know, she inked out 56 pages. And then it kind of dawned on us, like, this is a lot of content for, you know, we've been to the store. We've been picking up floppies for months now. This seems like a lot for an issue one. And we double checked, and we had to cut like 20 pages. She was very angry at me.
Was that? And I think what's interesting is that kind of first arc. It works as this like building of Piper and Fran and. And kind of establishing who they are. So, like, it's so crazy when you get to that second arc where you guys kind of go. And, like, that's, like, the real, like...
Yeah.
Like, adrenaline of the story and the horror kind of really builds out of that. But so, like, that the first arc is so important to kind of really build these characters. And, again, what's so interesting is, like, there's almost, like... I mean, there's tons of, like, nods to the history or, like, what's going on. But you get, like, absolutely, like, almost no answers in it. So, like, this, it's the second arc is such a huge payoff. Like, and I think that's, like, again, brilliant.
Thank
like,
you. I am sad because most people have not read the second arc, which I find is it's really funny to me. But it's just, like, how unfulfilling it would be to read the first 6 issues of this and be like, I guess I'm done now. I feel like all of it, all of the payoff is in the last 6 issues, the last book of it,
right? And which is, I mean, we've talked about a bunch. Like it's the, like the conversation that is kind of happening in comics where so many people are reading, mm-hmm. you know, trades now, and writing single issues is tough because again, you have to, you know, you really have to like tailor mm-hmm. your story to that. And I mean, even if you look at kind of the last page of his first arc, like in comics terms, I don't think that is very comic for like, and I think, I mean, you kind of discuss that, like kind of how you would actually end a comic. I find that refreshing. Like, I feel like that is very much kind of a prose, a movie, a like TV approach to it. Whereas like, you know, there's not a big, you know, it's not like a, I feel like a normal comic would have ended with them waking up where they were or something like that. Like, I feel like that is very much like the draw to next issue. So like, I find it like this story really fun. And it's interesting to read like this and then kind of go to like Power Rangers and then Terminal Punks.
Yeah, I did. Where like, I mean, has that done a swerve?
Has that like evolved like for you? Yeah.
I love writing so much. I really like, it's just something that I really love to do. And so, you know, as smart as I like to think that I am, even though I'm not, I'm always like, oh yeah, I want to write the next, you know, great American comic book. But it's like, I also cannot pass up an opportunity to write Power Rangers. Like if something comes up and if something comes along that is just so weird and unexpected, like, I don't know. I wrote Care Bears. I wrote 3 issues of that. That was weird. I didn't ever think I was going to do that in my whole life.
Yeah, I was going to ask. And I was going to be like, oh, I want to touch on your work on this famous licensed property. And then kind of like make it appear like Power Rangers, but then be like, Care Bears, how did that happen?
Care Bears happened, you know, I think the funny thing about the comics, the comics industry is that it's so funny. You kind of go in very optimistically, I think. And I think that's how everyone should kind of go into the comic book industry, is very optimistically, because as long as it seems you're a cool, nice person who's willing to basically, you know, do whatever it takes to get the job done and write a cool story, it seems like it's pretty workable for the most part. I was pitching, you know, stories to IDW. I had a connection through, I think one of the editor, an assistant editor picked up Long Lost at a convention, and I'm just really good with like hitting people back up if you know, they're a gatekeeper and they can make me money somehow. I just remembered and we started talking, and I found out that she was an editor and that she would take pitches. So I started pitching them, and they liked my pitches enough to be like, do you want to write Care Bears? Which, you know, again, it's like you get an email like that. It's like, you know, you think about the pros and the cons of, you know, you're thinking to your, like, your deathbed where, you know, you have your grandchildren around you and your wife, and you're like, if I get all the way there and my life's work is this one time I wrote a really good Care Bears comic in my 30s, and that's what it is, will I be okay with that? And I was like, yeah, I'd be pretty okay with that. If I wrote the best ever Care Bears story and that's what I was known for, I'm cool with it. And that's kind of how I go about taking the jobs that I take. If I can live with it on my deathbed, then we're game.
And comics is such a, I think, unique medium, and because it's obviously like kind of the midpoint between prose and movies, but you can do anything with comics because you don't have a budget, you don't have, like, obviously you have an artist you can't kind of overwork, but, and it's something me and Tim kind of, like, that is, like, we enjoy about comics the most, and, like, we've talked about it, but, like, there are no necessarily bad comics. Like, again, you could write, like, there's so many interesting things you could do with Care Bears. It's more on like, what is your approach, what is your willingness to have fun and kind of tackle this. And I mean, that's like, I mean, that's what we do with this show. Like, we'll never turn down anything. We just talked to the episode we posted recently was the director of the like Jiu-Jitsu movie with Nicolas Cage. Cool. Was like, fuck, man, that was like a fun movie, and like, yeah, we'll talk to the director, why the fuck, like, why not?
Like, cool stuff is happening. Cool, weird, wonderful things are happening all around us, and I think, I think if you're really tuned in to just like having fun and appreciating life and like being, I tend to think I'm a pretty easygoing, optimistic person. Like, I love working with people. I think I'm super easy to work with. I've had no complaints from any of the artists so far that I know of.
And from your wife?
Yeah, well, I mean, she's obviously, like, many complaints were filed. Many. I learned a lot writing comics based on how mad Lisa was going to be when I gave her a script. And I was like, oh, you don't want to draw this? And she's like, nobody wants to draw this. And I was like, okay, great. This is really good information for when I, you know, continue my career and I, you know, avoid those Kentucky Derby scenes or the crowd scenes with 300 people. But yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, life is weird and terrible and awesome. And a lot of people, me included, believe that, you know, this is basically it. So have fun with it and try to be cool about things and don't take things too seriously. Even Long Lost, you know, as personal and as much as it means to me, it exists, and I'm so happy that it exists, and I'm so grateful that people have read it and are interested in it and find value in it. But if someone, like, took a poop on it and hated it and threw it in the garbage and burned it up, I, you know, whatever. It's, like, it's cool.
I think...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... No, well, that's, like, the... Who was it? Oh, fuck. I can't remember which comics guy it was that was, like, buying the books to burn them. Like,
oh, I mean, not even, just... I mean, if those guys, I mean, I wasn't even talking about anyone in particular, but even if those guys, you know, think that there's too many women in this book for some reason, or whatever it is that they have a disagreement about, you know, whatever. They can go read their frog comics. It's like, who cares?
Yeah, and again, like, you dummy, you bought the book, you read it, you took the time, like, that is, again,
that's all I'm asking.
I never understand, like, I feel like the bigger insult is not even to buy it and not read it.
Don't,
and, like,
care, that makes me more angry.
Yeah, like, you took a chance, that's fucking cool, man. I'm not, like, gonna hate on that. And I think one of the, like, the biggest things I take away from your work, especially in Long Lost, like, I love Fran, and I always want to, I don't know why, it's like one of those words you see, I always want to say Pipper, it's Piper.
I like Pipper. Well,
the fucking anxiety.
I'll use Pipper somewhere, I promise. That's really funny.
And then Jen in Power Rangers, like, I think your approach to that character is really interesting. I think you are able to kind of understand characters and kind of then... visualize them and kind of present them in a way that they're very relatable, especially dialogue. Writing two ostensibly, like, teenage girls or young women in Long Lost, like, again, as a bearded white man could be very difficult. Obviously, I know you have that, like, the help of Lisa, but, like, it feels so genuine. It feels like, again...
Thank you.
Because I think the approach isn't necessarily, like... It doesn't feel like, again, two women. It feels like two sisters, two people who love each other or, you know, are struggling with that, talking to each other. And, again, Jen, kind of what she's going through in that. Like, what is, for you, what is your kind of approach to characters to kind of then get that out of them and really sell them in a story, which, again, I think is kind of the crux of your
Thank
work.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you. As far as characters, you know, the things that I create and the things that I write about, I see the act of creating as, you know, I hate saying this out loud because it's, you know, there's no other way to say it, but it's like, it's kind of like giving birth. And I say that with all of the acknowledgement of being a man. So, you know, obviously I don't know what giving birth's like, but this is the closest.
I've seen it. It doesn't seem like I've seen
it. This is the closest thing that I can kind of comprehend is, like, you know, these characters, Piper and Francis, and to a certain extent, you know, some of the characters that I've worked on intellectual properties as well. They're people that I try to make. Like, I don't know. I think they're real and they have lives and they have thoughts and they have, you know, things that are unknowable, and just like every other person that exists on this planet, there's just enough surface level information that you can kind of get an idea, but there's just some unknowables, and I kind of work with that with everyone that I, you know, write. And I think that allows me to find those interesting secrets and those interesting little things that come out of nowhere that you'll be writing a conversation and it just happens that this feels right to have this character say this thing. And there's really no reason or creative thing for it. A script I was just writing has this whole tangent about gachapons, and I don't know anything about gachapons. I had to research all of it. I looked it all up, and it was just like, I read this whole thing about it just so I could finish this rant about something I knew nothing about, because it just felt like what the character would feel and do at that moment. And I didn't want to, I really don't like to stop those moments from happening, because I think that's where you really get the fun, the real good fun stuff when you're writing. It's like you go down those roads and you see what happens, and if it's good, it's the best stuff ever, and if it's bad, who cares? You like get rid of it and you throw it away. And that's kind of how I approach characters and honestly kind of how I approach everything. A lot of the story, A Long Lost, was quote unquote plotted out before I started writing it, only because Scout needed to see what the hell I was going to do. But I did not. The outline to this story is like reading a different story. It immediately isn't this. It immediately veers from like the first issue. So I that's one of the harder things about writing intellectual property and doing work for hire stuff, is that all these editors, God bless them, They want me to tell them what I'm going to do. And I get it. You can't pay me unless you know what I'm going to do. And it's super hard sometimes to tell somebody what I'm going to do when I have no idea. And I roll the dice sometimes, and I see what happens. And I really can't think of writing any other way. It's like there's a little bit of a plan, and, you know, we all agree it's pretty all right. But there might be something else that we don't know about, and that's usually the route I end up taking.
Yeah, I can't imagine something. I think we were talking to someone recently, Tim. Was it Mark? Maybe
about
Mark Russell. Like, I think about kind of being like, you have to be flexible. Like, if you're writing something and like it changes, like you can't be like, all right, well, I gotta fit what I originally
had.
That's
the worst thing. You gotta be, it's like, as much as everything has the technical aspects of craft, and it's like, you know, that's where I'm most apprehensive, that's where I'm most self-conscious, was when you talk about like, I didn't go to college for writing. I'm self-taught. I've read a lot. I tried to do my best. and so it's like my apprehensions and my self-confidence thing, it's all centered around the technical aspect of structure and pacing. Pacing was a real big thing. I like all of my favorite things that I've ever read are slow and languid dirges. And so that's like all I thought what stories were. And that's, I mean, if there's any excuse for how, and not to say an excuse is needed, but if there's any reason as to why Long Lost is so dense and it's kind of slow in the beginning, and that's kind of how I taught myself how to write, from reading and working in short stories and stuff. And the thing is, it's like, it has to be so, my process at least has to be super intuitive. Otherwise, I get very caught up in the minutiae and the technical stuff. I'm writing this thing right now. It's unannounced, but there was so much science behind the concept of it that I just went on this rabbit hole. Like, I'm talking like week bender of just the most obscure, ridiculous science stuff, just because I wanted to be like technically put together for what I was building, even though that's like not who I am as a writer at all. And it's just the way I learned how to operate.
How is that? Do you, like, then kind of going to Power Rangers? Like,
yeah.
Like, again, that's, it's so crazy because that is, I mean, that is probably that publisher's biggest property. Like, yeah. That is a fucking gangbusters for them because it's, I mean, it's good. Like,
Ryan's stuff. It's like, it's as good as, I mean, that's how it was pitched to me. It's like, Cape Comics without the capes. Like, it's the next game in town if you're not writing Marvel or DC. And it's like a really good, it's like a really good one-to-one. Like, they're doing something really fresh and exciting with this property that has a lot of weight behind it. But anyway, yeah, back to your question. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, no, and that's, I mean, and that even kind of, like, builds on, like, what we're talking about. Like, something like, you look at TMNT and kind of what, I mean, it was always good kind of in this new era, but then when they were willing to kind of essentially re-arc it and kind of give it to Sophie and what she's done with that and kind of really, again, take a property which is what it is and then just, you know, tell a interesting story with it. It's completely different. And I think Power Rangers has done that with what Kyle did and what Ryan did. So then to kind of have one of, I think this is the first original, you know, graphic novel they've done. They've done several like spin-off or tie-in series with
yeah
it.
I think,
but this is
the first one for its own season. I think they had done two before this that were, I think there was I think they were both Soul of the Dragon and Psycho something or other.
So this
is their like third original graphic novel for the Power Rangers things, but I think it's the first for a non Mighty Morphin adjacent team. As I learned a lot about Power Rangers, y'all.
Yeah, I wanted to ask how much research.
Well, that's what I was gonna.
Oh man, boy howdy! I did a lot of research because, I mean, I didn't know anything. I watched the show when I was a kid. You know, I knew all about it as a kid, and then I became a teenager, and I was like, "There's other stuff for me to worry about than this." And then I went off to be sad for 15 years. You know, cut to 31 and I get an email with, you know, Power Rangers ? And I it's the weirdest thing. And so like, I was basically yes before I even knew anything about it. They just asked if I had any interest in writing for Power Rangers. And I was like, absolutely. That's the weirdest question anyone's ever asked me. I can't not say yes to this. It makes a lot of sense for me as a person, but it's just, it sounds wonderful. And then I got pitched the Time Force series, which I had no idea what that was. And then I had to become a fan of it. I had to watch it all. I had to read it all. I listened to the Hyper Force sequel that they did on Twitch. That was like it's like 500 hour RPG role playing game.
Oh shit.
Yeah. I listened to a lot of that, not all of it. But I listened to a lot of it, and I watched the show, and I read the fan wikis. I just wanted to make sure that I was, you know, people care about this way more than I care about it, to the point that they have demanded a 20-year-old season of television be resurrected in a book. It's a lot. It's a lot of pressure. And so I just really wanted to make sure I understood why people liked Time Force and why people liked these characters. And why, I mean, the question always with any intellectual property that I get handed is, why would they select me? But that often gets buried into the back of my brain, so I don't have to think about it. Moving beyond that question, it's like, you know, I just want to make sure I'm giving, like, I don't know, it's 100% trying to give the, you know, fan service, make people happy with the story you tell, because storytelling is, it's entertainment. And while also, you know, trying to be as true to yourself as an artist as you can be. That's the juggling act. And I'm really happy with Power Rangers. I think I told a really cool story. And I don't know, it's like, I approached it in the same way I approached Long Lost, really, and trying to find out who the characters were and intuit a little bit of it and have kind of a plan, but give myself the freedom to do whatever the hell I wanted.
Was there any research in, again, because I, like, you look at Long Lost and then even, like, Terminal Punks and everything, like, those are, I'd say, like, again, kind of very driven in character studies, and I think Sins of the Future is as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what's interesting about it. But I mean, it's still a Power Rangers book, and there's still, you know, fights and action and stuff like that. Were you versed in kind of writing action scenes? I know. I mean, it's probably, I don't want to say it's easier, but like,
no,
as a writer, kind of writing that versus drawing it, but like obviously, kind of writing the even pacing of a fight scene.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because it's something I did not have an opportunity to do at all. Well, I mean, there's that one 45-page fight sequence in Long Lost, right in the middle. That's the only fight sequence that I had. Long Lost has no fight sequences.
There's a chase scene, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stabbings that happen. And there's a little bit of action at the end, but it's not really a fight scene. But
there's no Morphin.
No, there's no Morphin. I wish there was. I'll go back, and whenever we do a reprint second edition, I'll put like a 15-page morph sequence in the middle of Long Lost. I'll George Lucas the whole thing. I am a huge fan of professional wrestling, and that is almost exclusively where I've been able to.
It's a live action comic book.
Yeah, it's just a live action comic book, baby. And so when I'm writing action sequences, I'm just trying to, you know, remember the cool wrestling matches that I've had. And I mean, I also am like a big fan of like the really ridiculous, you know, Dragon Ball Z style anime. Like, I think that's all super fun, and I love the energy, and I love how they can tell really meaningful character stories through loud screaming action. Like, I think that takes a lot of nuance and skill, despite the bombastic ridiculousness that is happening. I think it's one of the harder things to do, and I think that's why I love pro wrestling so much, is because, you know, they do tell stories in the action. And I've kind of tried to approach that as best I can with, you know, Power Rangers and Dark Crystal. And was there any action in Care Bears? There was a little bit. Basically just Power Rangers. It's just, you try to tell a story, you try to make the action have a meaning, and to make sure that there's a reason for this to happen, and it's not, you know, hateful or stupid or ridiculous. It actually makes sense for the characters to want to do this, and you try as best you can. But at the end of the day, you know, the punch and kick people have to punch and kick. So,
well, it's so, like, because obviously, you know, I grew up watching Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, and kind of the Attitude Era of wrestling, and like I ate it up, and like, again, like it is comic books, like those are obviously, you know, it's a manga, but I was talking this with my 7-year-old, because he just started reading the Frieza saga.
Oh, great.
So he's reading it, and like, I was like talking to him about the show, and I was like one issue is like 15 episodes. Like, that show is like the slowest fucking show in the world, and I loved it. Like, I would, and it, you know, it's a running joke, but like, it is so exciting as a kid. And like, same with wrestling, like they'd be like building up like a whole Raw to this match, and it would be like 2 minutes, and it would end with like someone standing at the end of the ring, and like, oh, next week we're gonna find this out. And it's so, again, kind of, it's like what you're talking about,
it's
with
serialized storytelling. It's like, it's the old, it's what I, it's my, you know, we grew up watching, you know, the same thing, and that's, we essentially grew up watching a never ending serialized story. I think that's the closest thing the United States has to producing something that is as continuous as, you know, I know in Japan they have, you know, Kento Mira, who does Berserk's been writing that for, you know, 35 years. And it's like,
still right, yeah.
Yeah, it's like we produce a different type of like this evergreen serialized story. And I think it's the American professional wrestling. It's like, you can go back and I can show anyone the Attitude Era, you know, Austin versus The Undertaker or something, and that whole storyline, and it's still watchable, it's still interesting, you like the characters the same way, it's still you know? And so wrestling is the closest thing that I can pull from. And yeah, that Dragon Ball Z stuff. It's like I try to keep those in mind when I'm writing action scenes because they do it the best.
And I think it's a connection I never made till I was older, but even kind of like talking, like, that is very much like kind of the, you know, again, I enjoy all types of horror, but like even the horror, like I said, like I enjoy slow burns. Mm-hmm. Like I'll watch a 2-hour movie if, you know, the final 10 minutes are kind of like, it all builds to that. And again, I think like Hereditary is like one of the best examples, like where, you know, stuff happens, but like it is all about that like last 10 minutes and like, you know, the frustration people have to that. And like something like Long Lost, again, where like the payoff is in that second arc, is like to go along with like to trust that the storyteller is telling the story the way they want to tell it, and like just kind of give yourself to it. And like the disconnect I think that kind of happens to storytelling like that, again, versus like the people who watch wrestling each week, like nothing happens each week. It's all about like a season of storytelling. Like,
well, I mean, there's there's an insidious side to wrestling, is that they figured out how to monetize that. But it's like, I mean, comic books too, to a lesser extent. But I mean, it's that same slow burn. It's a different type of slow burn, you know. Wrestling, there's more immediacy. There's more man on man contact. There's way more, you know, yelling. But it's the same, like nothing really happens if you're thinking about the narrative structure of a wrestling story, you know? It builds for 4 weeks and then you have a pay-per-view and then the story either escalates or is over. And that's basically what it is. And I think that serialized storytelling is a really interesting art form. And I think specifically in comic books, it's the most unique, because when you think about like television, most of television, from what I understand, is written in a writer's room by a large community of creatives, kind of collaborating towards a singular end script. And for comics, it's usually one or two writers for the whole thing, for 5 issues, for 12 issues, for, you know, think about Saga for 56 issues. Like, one person writing 56 episodes of television seems outlandish and insane, but comics creators and comics writers are doing that. And I think that's kind of the really interesting part about being in comics and writing serialized stories, is that it feels like this industry is the only place where that's happening at a pretty large consistency.
Before we kind of do the two final questions, I think, like I said, originally when we talked about Long Lost and obviously kind of Power Rangers and stuff like that, if you're listening to this, Terminal Punks is out. Just like a quick, like, I thought, again, it was kind of a really interesting kind of flip on the horror genre, or at least a take on that. And then also, again, kind of doing what you do well is kind of taking people, making them relatable, and then putting them together in a situation. Like, just quickly, like, what is, if someone has listened to this or has read Long Lost, like, what is Terminal Punks for those
people? Long Lost is it's a genetic sci-fi horror comedy about 4 teens that get trapped in an airport. 4 punk crust, dirty, mean teens get trapped in an airport. They're in a punk band. And also in the airport are 7 genetically mutated zoo animals that have been named after vape flavors. They're trying to kill them. That's the story. That's the 1-to-1. And Terminal Punks is really fun. I love music, and I, you know, getting to work with Shelby was a dream. They're an incredible artist. It's so, like, I feel so honored that I got to be a part of something that really felt like it was communicating the punk zine vibe. Really, like, it just feels like Shelby's work is so, it's naturally that, and it's so good, and it's such a good representation of what I love about those those kinds of comics, those kinds of zines.
And it's a clear through line from Long Lost where we see a Thursday poster on the wall. To it. I was like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I of course, why not?
Yeah, it took me back right to, so like, I must have been to 11th grade. I bought
War All the Time. It had to be.
No, what was the one before? Understanding in a Car Crash. Like,
yeah, that was Full Collapse.
Full Collapse, yeah. I remember specifically buying that, sitting in my room all day, and you're like, oh man, these guys get me to tears. Like, oh my god, so excited. I just saw, I was on some news site, and they had a Jeff, like, playlist or something.
Oh, cool. I unabashedly still love Thursday, and I think the great thing about getting older is that I can unironically look at the bands that I liked as a teenager and find really, really, really great value in the music, because I know that I turned out pretty all right, and so that music has to have at least contributed to some aspect of me being a pretty all right guy, so.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, yeah.
Yeah.
Did a whole, I think one of my final projects as a senior was we had to like do a, we had to edit a video and present it on a social topic. So I did like, was it Paris in Flames? All about, because it was like just as we had dropped the bombs in Iraq. When I was like the asshole kid in school with like the America's number one terror shirts, oh, yeah. Like going around like, you know, fucking get this. Like, and so like, yeah, man, it was, and like you said, very much kind of that aspect of it, being able to now just kind of share that with my kids, but also like the idea of like, I don't know what's going on. I had some thought earlier.
There are no guilty pleasures in music. I truly believe that.
I agree.
And
yeah.
And it's as long as it's not like racist or just like bigoted, then I'll probably dig whatever you're streaming into my ears. So, yeah.
Well, even that, like, it was, and now we're turning from a wrestling to a third, like, one of my first, like, real, like, understanding of graphic design, because they were big with, like, Ron Doby, and kind of pushing the narrative of, like, you know, design as, like, or art as, like, a, you know, vocal full point of, like, kind of what they mm-hmm. did, and I was like, oh, like, Ron Doby, and, like, discovering all that, and just kind of, like, the end ways, like, that helps you get to, So from a serious topic to my final question, Tim's got one, but if you Google Matthew, your mm-hmm. name, you'll get this guy, men's cross country.
Oh, yeah.
At Fordman University. He can run.
He can run. Boy, can he. I'm really proud of him, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can run a 6K in 21 minutes and 19 seconds. Can you beat
him? I cannot. He is the fastest Matterman alive. I think so. I'm trying to gather all of us, all of the Matthew Ermans on Twitter. I think he's on Twitter. I've communicated with him. He's a nice guy. Very humble.
He seems cool.
Very humble about how fast he is.
I mean, I'd be running all over the place. And he's in music. He does seem like a cool dude. And I think this, I didn't know Fordham's sponsored by Tim Hortons, so.
I didn't either.
Got something going right. So. Yeah, our final questions are not good. Tim, you go.
Yeah, it's just going to get worse. So, gun to your head, if you were forced to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
Okay, this is fine. I know so little about The Big Bang Theory, and I'm just going to pitch you my episode. I get an email from, who is it? I'm assuming it's Chuck Lorre.
It says Big Bang Theory ?
I don't know who's emailing me. I get an email. They want me to write an episode of Big Bang Theory. I go straight to cosmic horror. That's what I do. it's gonna be Bazinga, but it's gonna be Bazinga Cthulhu. It's gonna be horrible. I think Sheldon will lose his mind by the end of the episode, from witnessing some unknowable eldritch goo that has like subsumed his housemates, and he just goes mad and he locks himself in a bathroom and he's just screaming for like 2.5 minutes, and then roll credits.
Oh, That would be like
it's like that Garfield strip that got back in the '80s that Jim Davis did. Where
oh yeah, where he woke up and was like all alone.
Yeah, he's like Garfield goes mad in his empty house and he starves to death. It'd be like that.
I was thinking, what's what is it's what's the John Carpenter one?
The Thing.
No, the Sutter Kane. Oh. What is that one? Oh fuck, it's not Prince of Darkness. It's the other one. I'm blanking on it, but it's like the do you like everyone's asking him, do you read Sutter Kane, and like the slow madness of that
in the mouth of madness. Like,
do you know Bazinga? Yes, yeah. In the mouth of madness, but it could just be about Bazinga.
Have you? Do you know of Bazinga?
Bazinga. For anyone who wants to find you, your work, or your work on Big Bang Theory, yeah. Would be the easiest, best way to do that.
BigBangTheory.com. You can find all... No. You can find me on Twitter. I'm just Twitter / Matthew Ehrman, that my name. I was very lucky to be the only Matthew Ehrman, to just type it all out like that. So just Twitter, and then I have a website, MatthewErman.com. If you want to get in contact with me for whatever reason, I'm very open to emails. They are always a mystery box of who knows what.
Surprisingly, BigBangTheory.com is, I think someone's sitting on it, but you can get it
through. Oh, rad! So. I think I might have to.
That's surprising. Unless I spelled it wrong, which is a possibility.
No, it's available.
Oh, shit, man. That's a big fuck
up. That is a big one.
Oh man, Chuck Lorre. I think it's Chuck Lorre. I don't know.
It feels right.
Yeah. Tim, what do you?
Do? I'm right over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madura.
Again, I don't know why I ask it like that. Like I don't like we haven't we don't record every time there. Like Tim, I don't even know who you are. Why are you here? Like what do you do, Tim? Yeah, and then obviously you know where the show is probably. It's not a surprise when you listen to a comic book podcast, but we're at pages_panels on Twitter. We have an email, our podcast sucks at gmail.com. And then that's probably the main things. Me and Tim check the Twitter, so that's probably easiest. And I think that's it. I think the most important thing is, you know, obviously buying Terminal Punk's Long Lost is, I think it's volumes 1 and 2 are available at trade from Scout.
Yeah, you can get you can get both books on Scout's website. You can get the first book on Comixology. You can't get the second book on Comixology. And then if you really just don't want to deal with anyone, you can just hit me up on Twitter and I'll see what I can do.
And... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you buy it or we can harass Scout, because they haven't, I think they, I'm pretty sure, they haven't done a hardcover.
They have not yet.
And this would be the perfect book, and this is like the selfish undertone of the podcast, is actually having guests on and me just so I can like harass people into getting books I want made into hardcovers.
I would love Long Lost to be made into a hardcover. I think that is... You know, as much as I love the issue format, I think that is kind of how it was maybe meant to be read. And so, I mean, I have high hopes. I hope we do a hardcover. That would make me really happy. I don't know how it happens. Maybe I just need to email Scout, but I'll get on that. I'll literally do that. I'll try and get it to happen.
We'll harass them. I mean, they sell wall clocks. Yeah. Scout, they are. We talk about this all the time, and I'm not gonna put you on the spot because like they publish your stuff. Scout, I think they put out some of the best, like most unique new comic books. Like they take chances, yeah. And like they're fucking great. They have the weirdest merchandise on their site.
Yeah, I know. They Scout's an interesting bunch of people, and I'm very grateful that they exist.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm sure there's if you like Long Lost, I'm sure there's a wall clock or a throw you can
please
buy.
If you buy the wall clock, I'll if you buy the wall clock, I'll just send you the books.
Yeah, but I like we've talked about it a bunch, and I always feel bad because we're never gonna have a show where we don't actively like love a book. Like that's the pleasure of having your own podcast, which it's easy to do. Anyone can do it. It's not, we don't do anything. but like me and Tim actively seek out having ones where we just love the book. And like I said, long lost, I cannot, if you couldn't tell how much I enjoy the book. I think it's an amazing comic. It's beautiful. It is like one of the most unique looking books. What Lisa does with in kind of merging genres, so many like kind of like Junji Ito, like she's so good at the kind of like wide-eyed like hatch marks under the eyes, that is so prevalent in that, and then even the kind of like no-eyed shadows over it, that's so good. But go pick it up. It's amazing. Terminal Punks was such a great first issue. Thank you. Sins of the Past, if you're reading Power Rangers, I think it is a needed addition to it, because I think it fits perfectly into kind of what Kyle and Ryan had did. But we appreciate you coming on and talking to us and demeaning yourself to our terrible questions.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was an absolute I had an absolute blast. Thank you guys for having me. This is a very put together podcast you guys are putting on. I'm honestly really, really impressed. And I think
it's very surprising.
next month in December, Lisa and I will be having some very big announcements. And I'm happy to tell you guys first that yeah, we are announcing something very likely next month.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember reading Long Lost, and I didn't know you guys were married, and then I did the research, and then it was just like a rabbit hole of your work, and then Lisa's work is amazing. Like, I was like, oh man, he gets to like see that work all the time. Like, it was like you could just get like a drawing anytime you want. That's crazy.
Well,
which again, it's probably just annoying. Like, no one fucking cares. Like at that point, yeah, it's like
she has not drawn something for me personally in a long time. She's drawn stuff professionally for me. So
yeah, I guess
she drew a whole fucking book for me. So
and then you made her throw out half of it. Yeah, so I think you did. Again, thank you so much to Matthew. And I promised him next episode we'll get back to George Lopez one of these days. We're 45 episodes in. We'll talk about it one of these times. But thanks for joining us. I'm gonna cut there.